This is the Practical Teaching Tips Podcast. I am your host, Richard James Rogers, high school science and chemistry teacher and author of the award-winning book, The Quick Guide to Classroom Management. Well, hello everybody and welcome to today's episode on the Practical Teaching Tips podcast. I am your host, as always, Richard James Rogers. Today, I want to delve into the very important and very well-understood topic and very heartfelt topic of teacher workload. And today's topic has been inspired by a tweet which I responded to and which really tug at my heartstrings actually, and which was published by Whistleblowing Teacher on Twitter. Now, if you've never checked out Whistleblowing Teacher, I recommend you do, because it's a Twitter handle where people can submit and send any question they want anonymously about teaching, and it gets published on the Twitter feed, and then people can comment with their suggestions. So it's actually a very good source of juicy information and real issues that are affecting teachers. So Whistleblowing Teacher's Twitter handle is at WhistleblowingT on Twitter. And on April the 14th, this is what somebody wrote in. So I'm going to quote to you now, and I quote, "This week, I have seriously considered leaving teaching. I have worked most days of the Easter break so far and still have loads left to do for Monday that it's giving me so much anxiety. I am dreading going back to work next week. The workload and conditions, on top of knowing that I need to find a new job for September, 12 months temp not being kept on, is affecting my mental health. I am a first-year ECT and really can't see this career being long-term. Really stuck between trying another school to complete my induction or applying for jobs within my subject, which are offering the same as M1 or M2, that's the British teacher pay scale, by the way, so that I wouldn't lose any pay. Now, this really got me thinking, because I remember when I was a newly qualified teacher all those years ago, back in 2006, and I found my job back then to be so, so difficult. And often, actually, it was because I was making more work for myself than I needed to. I was also very inexperienced back then when I was in my early career, like the person who posted this question. And so I found behavior management a challenge at first. I found marking and assessment a challenge at first. But again, oftentimes that was because I created too much work for myself. So today I'm going to describe some time-saving, workload-reducing tips for teachers. I'm going to describe three of them, and I'm going to give you a bonus tip at the end as well. But this is my reply to the tweet. I wrote, "Whoever wrote this, I'm really sorry to hear about your predicament. Teaching is a difficult job, especially when you're new to it, but it does get easier over time. As for workload, you may be doing too many unnecessary things." And then I've linked to the blog post, which I'm going to read to you all. And that tweet got 13 likes there. So I'm going to open up this blog post now. It's called 3 Tips for Reducing Your Teacher Workload. It's linked in this episode description. What I'm going to do is read the blog post to you. I do this because it allows me to keep these podcast episodes really direct and really clear, and it stops me waffling too much. But I will also add some commentary along the way. So here begins my blog post. "Before I give my general tips on how to reduce your workload as a teacher, please remember that if you are facing extreme pressure from work, for example, unrealistic deadlines, then you must tell your line manager. If nothing gets done about it and you're facing long-term unsustainable pressure, then simply leave. Life is too precious to be bullied around by people who want to crack the whip but don't realize that you are a human and you need downtime. Now, to elaborate on that, everybody, I did work in a school once in China some years ago where the deadlines and the workload was absolutely crazy. They were absolutely crazy deadlines. An example I can think of was there was one occasion when we had to mark midterm exam papers and write reports and do an exam analysis within 24 hours. And it was just crazy. And I was one of many teachers who stayed overnight well until 4 or 5 a.m. in the morning in the teacher's office just getting that work done. It was absolutely horrible. And there were many problems at that place. And it was clear to me that, you know, those problems just weren't going to be fixed at all. And, you know, and senior management just were not really on the same brainwave as teachers. And many of them had not even been teachers themselves. So it is possible to work in a very hostile environment. And if you find that you are in an environment like that, and you've done the necessary professional things to raise alarm, you've spoken with your line manager and you've politely said what's wrong and you've offered solutions and nothing's changing, consider making a move to a new school because, life is too short to be treated like that. So what are my suggestions then? What are my tips to help the rest of us reduce our general workload? What if you're working in a perfectly good school, but you're just finding it hard? What kind of things could you be doing as a teacher to make your life more difficult than it needs to be? And I'm an expert at all of these things because I've made all of these mistakes. So number one, do more peer and self-assessment. And this is so relevant today, everybody, because teaching is becoming more automated. It's becoming more digitized. So the era of marking student notebooks and assignments by hand and giving them back to students, you know, that era is coming to a close. And it is more important that we get our students involved in the assessment process. It's actually more effective for them that way as well. It's a more effective form of feedback. So let me read what I've wrote here. You've probably heard this one 1,000 times, but it's at the top of the list because it's one of the best ways to keep your marking down to a minimum. Besides, the benefits of peer and self-assessment go way beyond the reduction of workload. Peer assessment encourages, and I quote, student involvement and ownership of learning and self-assessment encourages, and I quote, encourages students to critically reflect on their learning progress. I think I said encourages twice then. But anyway, that's from the Center of Education Innovation of Hong Kong. So one more time. Peer assessment encourages student involvement and ownership of learning, and self-assessment encourages students to critically reflect on their learning progress. So that's from real research there by the Center for Education Innovation of Hong Kong. And look at what the University of Sydney say. Both self and peer assessment focus, and I quote, on the development of students' judgment skills, and I close quote. So peer and self-assessment is backed by lots of research, actually, as a very useful and productive and effective mode of providing feedback. Let me carry on with the blog post. But we don't need the experts to tell us that peer and self-assessment are both really cool. Experience shows teachers that both techniques are simply a very efficient way to get our marking done whilst reinforcing the concepts tested in the assignment being marked. I know that some people will say, but what if the students cheat? That's why we reserve teacher-driven marking for big final assessments and tests and coursework. Besides, in my experience, when self and peer assessment are done properly, it's actually very hard for the students to cheat. Here are my top three tips for peer and self-assessment. Number one, make sure you have an official mark scheme or set of answers ready for those students to use. I would advise against projecting the answers on the whiteboard and going through each question one at a time. That just takes ages, and kids always have disputes and questions. Print the mark scheme or distribute it electronically. Number two, sit at your desk or at an accessible point in the classroom and let the students come and see you if they have a doubt about how many marks to award to a question or what the correct answer is. Don't walk around the classroom and help the kids. It'll drive you crazy and is very inefficient. Yeah, it's you can do it that way, everybody, but it's just not the most productive way to do peer assessment or self-assessment that way. It's better if you're sat at a particular position in the classroom and you ask the students to come to you, unless you've got a large class of students and they're prone to being disruptive, then you might need to walk around the classroom as a behavior management technique by maintaining proximity. But otherwise, you can ask them to come to you. Number three, always insist that the students write the final mark or percentage at the top or front of the assignment. This will make your data entry easy. Also, make sure you collect the work in after the peer or self-assessment and just have a quick glance through it, perhaps focusing on those questions where common misconceptions are likely to crop up. This has the added benefit of deterring student cheating as well. The kids know you have collected in the work after they have marked it, and also make it clear to the students that you are going to double check that work after it's marked as well. And make sure you do double check it as well, everybody. It's important to just glance through those questions, make sure the marks have been added up properly. This is perfect for regular homework, for short tests. For high stakes assessments, of course, you want to be using traditional marking, but for everything else, you can use peer and self-assessment. Number two, use live marking. Now, anybody who's been following me for a long time knows that this is one of my favorite techniques. Live marking is a brilliant and simple technique that I picked up far too late in my teaching career. It would have saved me many a late night had I have conceived of it earlier. You see, I now know that feedback only works if it's relevant, specific, and somewhat emotional. How do we achieve this? We must mark, watch this now, everyone, we must mark student work with the students. They have to be involved too. As soon as I started doing the following things, my impact skyrocketed. Number one, simply walk around the classroom with a colored pen in hand. Tick, flick, and mark student work as you walk around. Number two, for larger pieces of work, set the kids on a task and call the students to your desk one at a time. Sit with the student and discuss the work, adding written comments in front of the student along the way. Use praise effectively, and remember, praise only works if it is sincere, specific, and collective. Remember that phrase I often use, everybody. Praise must be collective in order to be effective. What does that mean? It means tell your colleagues and get your colleagues to praise the student too. Oh, John did some great work in chemistry class for me today. Would you mind just talking to him in registration tomorrow and telling him how pleased I am with his work? Very, very powerful. Number three. Use peer assessment and self-assessment, but don't do this for everything. Students still need to receive acknowledgement from their teacher, and verbal acknowledgement is very, very powerful. Now, if you go to the blog post that's linked in this description, there is also a video that I have made about live marking that you can watch. You may also like another blog post of mine, which is called The Four Pillars of Time-Saving Marking. And I will put that in my episode description today. It's also the pinned tweet on my Twitter feed. And you can find my Twitter at Richard J.A. Rogers. Richard J.A. Rogers. Again, my Twitter is linked in the episode description. Number three, the third tip for reducing your workload is to use recurring homework. This is a simple idea that can, or maybe must, be used right the way up to year 13 or grade 12 or K-12, right to the end of schooling. Even if you are doing university type stuff, you can use recurring homework. Set homework on the same day each week. Collect homework on the same day each week or each month, whatever your schedule is. Plan your marking around this schedule. And that's the essence of it, really. This is a practice I currently use with my learning journals system. And again, there's a blog post about learning journals, which you can read, which is linked in this episode description. It's well worth a read. The essence of it is every day, the same day every week, I set my students a homework. I collect that homework in on the same day every week. So maybe, for example, I set a homework every Monday. I collect a homework every Wednesday, for example. Yeah. And the idea with learning journals, which is taking that a step further now, is every week the students really have the same homework. And their homework is to fill in their learning journal with what they've learned that week, any past paper questions they found on the internet, any revision notes, any mind maps and concept maps. And when you do that, you leave the creativity up to the student. They can choose how to fill in their learning journal every week. It is very, very powerful, especially for older students. So I strongly, strongly recommend trying learning journals, and they can also be done digitally. So check out that blog post, everybody. Now, I did say there was a bonus tip to help you reduce your workload. This is another one that I really wish I would have carried out with more intensity when I was a newly qualified teacher. And that is to keep your resources and to reuse your resources every year. This is so helpful. For example, if you have spent hours and hours making a scheme of slide presentations, or you've made some worksheets, or you've sourced worksheets off the internet, or you've sourced resources, keep them. Keep them in specially designated folders on your USB drive, maybe. Year 10 chemistry, year 9 English, whatever it is. And link those to the lessons that you've used. And every year you can reuse those resources. You might need to modify them slightly, but that takes so little time to do. It's much better than trying to find new resources every year, or trying to create new resources every year, or even trying to search for new resources every year. If you've got a good organizational system and you know which resources you used last year and you can use them again this year, that will save you so much planning time. And today it is so easy to do this with systems like Google Classroom, for example. If you set up your Google Classroom or your Moodle Classroom, or your Firefly Classroom, whatever system you're using, and you set that up really well, you organize it so well, you can basically replicate that the following year if you're teaching the same course to the same age level of students. So definitely reuse your old resources. And that extends as well to report writing, everybody. And I do not feel guilty in saying this. And I think every teacher secretly does this anyway, although we don't like to admit it. But old reports that you've written for students, keep them, reuse them for new students. Of course, you're going to have to change the name of the student the next time you use it. You might have to change a he or she here or there. You might have to modify the report slightly, but that is going to save you much more time than writing a new report from scratch. I have saved so much time doing this. Reuse old reports and modify them to meet the requirements of the new students that you've taught. I think that is a perfectly acceptable use of your time, and it definitely improves productivity. So I really hope those tips were useful, everybody. This is my aim with this podcast series, is to provide practical teaching tips, things you can actually use on a day-to-day basis in the classroom. If you like this podcast, please share it with people you know, share it far and wide. Please feel free to follow me on social media. And please check out my award-winning book for teachers, The Quick Guide to Classroom Management, 45 Secrets That All High School Teachers Need to Know. And that book, that best-selling award-winning book, which won the bronze medal from Reader's Favorite for Nonfiction Education, is linked in the episode description. So please check that out. Thank you, everybody. Until next time, bye-bye for now.